Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I want to thank the Haitian people for demanding what is good. I want to thank everyone in the government team. You have served with integrity, wisdom, and honor. God bless Haiti.
After a week-long state of emergency, Haiti's unelected prime minister, Ariel Henry, says he will resign once a transitional council is established. The Caribbean organization CARICOM has reportedly proposed a seven-member presidential panel that would appoint a new interim prime minister. We'll get the latest. Then to Gaza.
International humanitarian law lies in tatters, and the threatened Israeli assault on Rafah could plummet the people of Gaza into an even deeper circle of hell.
We'll go to Rafah to speak with Youssef Hamash, with the Norwegian Refugee Council, and to Francesca Albanese, United Nations Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory. Then, as President Biden pushes a bipartisan bill to crack down on immigrants, the Tacoma, Washington-based advocacy group La Resistencia is reporting one death and two suicide attempts at the troubled Northwest Detention Center run by the private GEO Group.
I was brought back to my cell at around 11:30 a.m. and I saw a lot of people running around everywhere. The police arrived in the fire department. I saw that a man who was black appeared as if he had hung himself.
We'll go to Tacoma. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Haiti's unelected prime minister, Ariel Henry, has announced he'll resign once a transitional council is established. He made the announcement after Caribbean leaders held an emergency meeting in Jamaica to discuss the crisis in Haiti, where armed groups launched an uprising against Henry last week. U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken attended the meeting and pledged $100 million to help finance the deployment of a multinational force mission to Haiti. Henry announced his plan to resign in a video message posted online.
After the Council of Ministers, it's been agreed to set up a presidential transitional council. Once chosen, the council will govern over different sectors of national life. Haiti wants peace. Haiti needs stability. Haiti needs sustainable development. Haiti needs to rebuild democratic institutions. I'm asking all Haitians to remain calm and do everything they can for peace and stability to come back as fast as possible for the good of the country.
The Miami Herald is reporting CARICOM has proposed a plan to set up a seven-member presidential panel that would appoint a new interim prime minister for Haiti. Barbados Prime Minister Mia Mottley said the panel would only include Haitians who support the deployment of a UN-backed security force. Last week, Ariel Henry traveled to Kenya, which is slated to lead the security mission with 1,000 Kenyan police. He's been unable to return home and was reportedly most recently in Puerto Rico. On Monday, one of the leaders of the recent armed uprising in Haiti, Jimmy Charizier, known as Barbecue, warned against outside forces picking Haiti's next leader.
We take this opportunity to say to the international community that if it continues down this path, it will plunge Haiti into chaos when it chooses a small group of politicians and negotiates with them on paper to decide who can be president and what kind of government we're going to have. Today it's clear that it's the inhabitants of the working class districts and the Haitian people who know what they're suffering at the moment. And it's up to them to choose the person who's going to lead them and the way he's going to lead them.
We'll have more on Haiti after headlines. Al Jazeera is reporting Israeli forces in Gaza have killed at least 11 people who are waiting for aid in Gaza City. More than 20 injured people were taken to Al-Shifa Hospital. Health officials in Gaza say Israeli forces have killed more than 400 aid seekers in Gaza in recent weeks. This comes as Israel continues to restrict aid coming into Gaza, which is on the brink of famine. The UN is reporting one truck was recently denied access to Gaza because it contains scissors inside medical kits. UNRWA head Philippe Lazzarini criticized the decision, saying, quote, medical scissors are now added to a long list of banned items the Israeli authorities classify as for dual use. He went on to write, quote, the list includes basic and life-saving items from anesthetics, solar lights, oxygen cylinders and ventilators, water cleaning tablets, cancer medicines and maternity kits, he said. Meanwhile, an aid ship bound for Gaza has set sail from Cyprus with 200 tons of food supplies. The UAE-funded mission was organized by the two aid groups, World Central Kitchen and Open Arms. Inside Gaza, Palestinians marked the first day of Ramadan on Monday.
The first day of Ramadan is very tough. We don't know what we're going to cook. What are we going to have for iftar, the meal breaking the fast? Also, at suhoor, the meal before the fast at dawn, we couldn't cook. There's no gas. We get out of the tent in the cold to light the fire, and it's really cold. How are we going to cook? Also, the prices are unimaginable. Prices of the tomato and the potatoes, the prices are high. We can't get meat or chicken. Everything is very expensive. In this situation, we don't want aid. What we want is a ceasefire.
On Monday, senior U.S. intelligence officials testified before Congress. The director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, warned the war in Gaza will increase the threat of terrorism for years.
Moreover, the crisis has galvanized violence by a range of actors around the world. And while it is too early to tell, it is likely that the Gaza conflict will have a generational impact on terrorism.
The Guardian is reporting 12 prominent Israeli human rights organizations have signed an open letter accusing Israel of failing to abide by the ruling of the International Court of Justice to facilitate more humanitarian aid into Gaza. In the letter, the groups wrote, quote, the ICJ order is a legal obligation to end the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. It must be abided by not only to ease the urgent suffering of civilians, but for the sake of humanity as a whole, they wrote. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has accused the Israeli military of beating and waterboarding some of its staff held in Israeli prisons. UNRWA states in a new report, quote, agency staff members have been subject to threats and coercion by the Israeli authorities while in detention and pressured to make false statements against the agency, including that the agency has affiliations with Hamas and that UNRWA staff members took part in the 7 October 2023 atrocities, unquote. UNRWA has faced a crisis ever since Israel accused a number of its staff workers of taking part in the October 7th attacks. Although Israel did not share evidence backing up its claim, many countries, including the United States, cut off funding to UNRWA despite Gaza's catastrophic humanitarian crisis. In recent days, Sweden and Canada resumed funding. India has enacted a controversial citizenship law that makes it easier for non-Muslims who've moved to India to become citizens. Under the law, Hindus, Buddhists, Christians, Sikhs, Jains, and Parsis who moved to India before 2015 from Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Bangladesh would become eligible for citizenship. The law excludes Muslim immigrants. The bill's passage in 2019 sparked deadly protests, but the law was not implemented until now, just ahead of a major election, as Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi seeks a third term. Amnesty International criticized the law, saying it's, quote, a discriminatory law that goes against the constitutional values of equality and international human rights law. A former manager at Boeing, who became a whistleblower, has been found dead in South Carolina. According to the BBC, John Barnett had given evidence in a whistleblower lawsuit against the company in recent days. The Charleston County coroner said Barnett died of a self-inflicted wound on Friday. Barnett had worked at Boeing for 32 years before retiring in 2017. He later spoke to the New York Times about problems at a Boeing South Carolina plant that manufactures the 787 Dreamliner aircraft. On the campaign trail, Donald Trump suggested Monday he's open to cutting spending on Social Security and Medicare. During an interview on CNBC, Trump said, quote, "There's a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting." President Biden responded with a message on social media saying, quote, "Not on my watch." Meanwhile, the Republican National Committee has fired over 60 staffers just days after Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, became the RNC new co-chair as the former president strengthens his control of the Republican Party. In other Trump news, the former president is seeking to delay the start of his upcoming hush money trial, which is slated to begin March 25th in New York. Trump's requested the trial wait until the U.S. Supreme Court reviews his immunity claim in another case. Republican Alabama Senator Katie Britt is facing backlash after telling a misleading story during her much-criticized response to President Biden's State of the Union last week. While criticizing Biden's border policies, Britt told the story of a 12-year-old girl who was sexually trafficked by drug cartels and repeatedly raped.
"We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it. President Biden's border policies are a disgrace."
What Senator Britt didn't tell the nation is that the incident took place during the administration of President George W. Bush, that the abuse took place in Mexico, not the United States, and that drug cartels were not involved. The woman who Britt referenced, Carla Jacinto, appeared on CNN over the weekend.
"Yes. In fact, I hardly ever cooperate with politicians because it seems to me that they only want an image. They only want a photo. And that, to me, is not fair. I work as a spokesperson for many victims who have no voice, and I really would like them to be empathetic. All the governors, all the senators, to be empathetic with the issue of human trafficking, because there are millions of girls and boys who disappear all the time, people who are really trafficked and abused, as she mentioned. And I think she should first take into account what really happens before telling a story of that magnitude."
We'll have more on that story later in the broadcast. In California, a 15-year-old black teenager with autism was shot dead Saturday at his home by a sheriff's deputy. The teenager, Ryan Gaynor, was reportedly holding a gardening tool when he was fatally shot by a deputy from San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. Officers had come to his home after receiving reports of a domestic incident. Attorney DeWitt Lacey said, quote, "There are great questions as to whether it was appropriate to use deadly force against a 15-year-old autistic kid who was having an episode. We need to see the video and the moment of the shooting, but it doesn't seem like anyone was in imminent danger of death or great bodily injury," unquote. And in Sweden, police have forcibly removed climate activist Greta Thunberg and dozens of other environmental protesters who were blocking the entrance to the Swedish parliament for a second day. Thunberg spoke at the action.
"Right now, we are a group of young people who are blocking entrances to the Swedish parliament, the Riksdag, to protest against the ongoing destruction of our life supporting systems and of people already being killed as a result of the climate crisis, and that needs to come to an end. We have had enough."
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we're beginning today's show with Haiti, where the unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry has announced he'll resign once a transitional council is established. He made the announcement after Caribbean leaders U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken and others held an emergency meeting in Jamaica to discuss the crisis in Haiti, where armed groups launched an uprising last week against Henri. He announced his resignation in a video message posted online.
After the Council of Ministers, it's been agreed to set up a presidential transitional council. Once chosen, the council will govern over different sectors of national life. Haiti wants peace. Haiti needs stability. Haiti needs sustainable development. Haiti needs to rebuild democratic institutions. I'm asking all Haitians to remain calm and do everything they can for peace and stability to come back as fast as possible for the good of the country.
The Miami Herald is reporting CARICOM has proposed a plan to set up a seven-member presidential panel that would appoint a new interim prime minister who would rule until elections are held. Barbados Prime Minister Mia Mottley said the panel would only include Haitians who support the deployment of a UN-backed security force. Last week, Prime Minister Ariel Henry traveled to Kenya, which is slated to lead the security mission. He's been unable to return home and was reportedly most recently in Puerto Rico. On Monday, one of the leaders of the recent armed uprising in Haiti, Jimmy Charissier, who's known as Barbecue, warned against outside forces picking Haiti's next leader.
We take this opportunity to say to the international community that if it continues down this path, you will plunge Haiti into chaos when it chooses a small group of politicians and negotiates with them on paper to decide who can be president and what kind of government we're going to have. Today it's clear that it's the inhabitants of the working class districts and the Haitian people who know what they're suffering at the moment. And it's up to them to choose the person who's going to lead them and the way he's going to lead them.
For more, we're joined by Jemima Pierre, professor at the Social Justice Institute, University of British Columbia in Canada, and research associate at the University of Johannesburg. She's a Haitian-American scholar and co-coordinator of the Black Alliance for Peace's Haiti Americas team, which has been closely following the crisis in Haiti. She has a recent piece in NACLA headlined Haiti as Empire's Laboratory. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Events and developments are proceeding quickly, Professor Pierre. Can you respond to Ariel Henry's announcement, we believe from Puerto Rico, that he will be stepping down and what exactly that means?
Good morning, Amy. Thanks for having me back again. I wanted to it is interesting. What many people are saying is that how could a prime minister that was not chosen by the people or any elected official resign when he didn't have a mandate to begin with? And so what I see and what many see is this charade apparently happening, in the sense that they're trying to put a veneer of legality on this situation, basically saying that Henri has to resign in order to have a presidential council, in order to move on with so-called free and fair elections. And so, to me, the people making decisions continue to make the decisions, and the resignation is only a veneer of legality for those making the decisions. And that itself is a problem that is not going to be solved.
And Professor Pierre, this all the coverage that we're getting here in the United States is of chaos created by gangs in the street. You have a different perspective and view of these so-called gangs, and you actually object to that use of that term. Could you talk about why and the role of the gangs in forcing Henri out?
Well, like I said yesterday, the problem that people focus on and what makes the media, what makes the mainstream news in the U.S. is just pictures of extreme violence by these groups. I don't like the term gangs because I don't think these are gangs. It's an extremely terrible and racialized term used, especially when it comes to people from Haitian and nations like Haiti. And I think these are armed groups. Some are paramilitaries and some are just armed groups that have access to guns. And in that sense, we have to be clear that this is not a bunch of people running around in terms of thinking about movies from the 1990s in the U.S. about gangs. And so that's the first. The second thing is that the so-called gang violence is actually not the main problem in Haiti. The main problem in Haiti is the constant interference of the international community. And the international community here is very explicitly the U.S., France, and Canada. What's fascinating about yesterday's negotiations with CARICOM is the fact that the key negotiators, so-called foreign negotiators outside of the CARICOM countries, were U.S., France, Canada, and Mexico. What's fascinating, and that's problematic in itself, because it was U.S., France, and Canada that were behind the coup d'etat that removed our elected president, that led us to this the precipice that we're in right now. And so, how is it that France, of all places, why is it all the way in the Caribbean negotiating on behalf of Haiti? The other part is these negotiations were happening. The foreign governments met first in a secret meeting that did not include Haitian participants, and then later on let in the Haitian participants. And then the foreign governments laid out rules of engagement, which means that you cannot be part of the discussion if you don't agree, first of all, to this foreign military intervention that the U.S. is planning for Haiti. And so that tells us, what does that tell us? That the U.S. makes the decisions that this is the status quo, and that things, the same things that happen now will flare up again later.
And what interest does the U.S. have in Haiti and Canada as well?
Right. People always ask, why is it that the U.S. has so much interest in Haiti? And we have to ask that from the very beginning, because the U.S. has been trying to control Haiti for a very long time, since the late 1800s, when it wanted the Mole Saint-Nicolas Island the top part of the island, because the Haiti's on the Windward Passage, which is a direct route through there to the Panama Canal for the U.S. to reach Asia. The U.S. needs to have a very strong force there in order to stave off, Cuba, Venezuela, and so on. The U.S. needs Haiti for its corporations and cheap labor, because Haiti has a 12 million people in its population, the largest country in CARICOM, and Haiti's been destabilized by the U.S. over and over again. And this mission, I wanted to also say, this mission that people are calling a UN mission is a problem, because it is not a UN mission. It's a UN sanctioned mission. But if people read the print of the resolution that allows for this deployment, and it's a Chapter 7 deployment, which means that these forces can use extreme force by land, air, and sea. If they read the agreement, it says that it's not officially a UN mission. It's a mission led by volunteer states. That means that they have to pay for it, which is why Blinken, and the U.S. said that the Department of Defense is adding more money. And that's why Blinken is paying for the Kenyans $200 million. Now it's $300 million to come in and do this. And so this not being an official U.N. mission means that it's actually more precarious for Haitian people, because in terms, when we think about human rights, at least we had the veneer of protection under a U.N. occupation when we had the U.N. occupation occupy Haiti from 2004 to 2017. And everyone remembers what this occupation meant for Haitians. It meant cholera that killed 10 to 30 million and sickened, not million, 10 to 30,000 and sickened a million. That brought lots of extrajudicial killings and murders and sexual exploitation of young girls and women in Haiti. And so for us, what occupation means is this. And so now, and these were the people who were under UN rules of engagement. This mission to Haiti is not under UN rules of engagement. And for people to say, for those running these negotiations to say that the first requirement to be able to participate in this conversation is to allow this foreign force of Kenyans who don't speak English, who are known for their human rights abuses, to me, that's a very big problem. And I have to say just one thing quickly. This reminds me of something that Dantes Delgado, who was a Haitian diplomat in the early 1900s while Haiti was also under occupation, where he said, "God is too far and the United States is too close." And I think this is what a lot of people are feeling right now in Haiti.
And finally, is this going to allow Henri to come back into the country now that he said he is planning to step down? And what about the implications that Henri was involved with the assassination of Moise, having spoke repeatedly on the phone to Badiou, who is the man in the room with Moise and the Colombian assassins who identified this is the president for them to kill and had been to Henri's house multiple times. So was he implicated, and do you think he will come back to Haiti?
Well, I think I'm not sure Henri will come back to Haiti because, you know, he's become persona non grata, even though I think he's not the main problem. The main problem is the so-called international community running Haiti. Henri is implicated in the assassination, which is why we also have to ask why the U.S. supported Henri all these 30 months, despite the fact that we all knew. They knew that he was implicated in the assassination. What Henri has to be concerned about is the U.S. sanctioning him and also later on charging him in this assassination. And so, you know, I'm not sure this solves a problem that's been going on in Haiti. People said, you know, journalists were reporting that the streets were calmer yesterday, but I'm not sure that people are going to take this because what it does, it just demonstrates that Haiti is continuously under this occupation of these foreigners. And I have to say, one of the other conditions that Mia Motley, working on behalf of the U.S., said was in addition to for you to be at the negotiating table, you have to accept the multinational corporation, but you also have to accept that when there is an election board set up for the transition, that those negotiating cannot disagree with the results of the election board. And so they set the parameters for them to choose the next leader of Haiti. And that to me means that this problem will continue, and there's going to be more flare-ups in the next few months, in the next few years, if we don't catch this by its root, if we don't stop this problem by its root, which is the constant U.S. imposition of its terms on Haitian people and the denial of Haitian sovereignty.
Jemima Pierre, we want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to cover this. Haitian American scholar, professor at the Social Justice Institute of the University of British Columbia in Canada, research associate at the University of Johannesburg, just recently left UCLA as a professor. Next up, we go to Rafah, as Israel continues to restrict aid coming into Gaza, which is on the brink of famine. Back in 60 seconds.
تكبر تكبر فمهما يكن من جفاك ستبقى بعيني ولحمي ملاك تكبر تكبر فمهما يكن من جفاك وتبقى كما شاء لي حبنا.
I Love You More by Umima El Khalil. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodmove, Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to Gaza, where Al Jazeera's reporting Israeli forces have killed at least 9 people who are waiting for aid in Gaza City. 20 injured people were taken to Al-Shifa Hospital. This comes as Israel continues to restrict aid coming into Gaza, which is on the brink of famine. The UN's reporting one truck was recently denied access to Gaza because it contained scissors inside medical kits. UNRWA head Philippe Lazzarini criticized the decision, saying, quote, medical scissors are now added to a long list of banned items the Israeli authorities classify as for dual use. He went on to say the list includes basic and life-saving items from anesthetics, solar lights, oxygen cylinders and ventilators, water cleaning tablets, cancer medicines and maternity kits, unquote. Meanwhile, an aid ship bound for Gaza has set sail from Cyprus with 200 tons of food supplies. The UAE-funded mission was organized by 2 aid groups, World Central Kitchen and Open Arms. Inside Gaza, Palestinians mark the first day of Ramadan Monday. For more, we go directly to Rafah, to Youssef Hamas. He is advocacy officer in Gaza for the Norwegian Refugee Council. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Thank you so much for joining us, Youssef. Can you explain what's happening on the ground right now? Talk about the issue of famine and hunger and what you think needs to happen.
First of all, thanks for hosting me again and giving me the chance. And unfortunately, since we last spoke until now, nothing have changed, only except for the wars. Yani more families have been displaced by the ongoing bombardment all across Gaza. Situation Rafah is deteriorating day by day. We are not able to fulfill the basic needs for families here. It's people are scattered in the streets everywhere, so it's an unimaginable situation for displaced families in Rafah. And we have different situation for the middle area and the northern part of Gaza, which unfortunately even from media is kind of abounded, while families and children on the verge of a famine and over 25 people were killed from hunger. The situation in Gaza is going into unclear vision and in the horizon. We don't understand what's coming next. All what we are having is a daily basis of madness, violence, bombardment, and a death toll that's increasing.